I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A terrific book came out this summer, Sensational Vancouver. Its author, Eve Lazarus, joins me again to talk about what was a hit on the bestsellers list, spending many weeks as number one. It's a generously illustrated book that shows Vancouver mainly in the first half of the 20th century, as it once was. In the view that we get was that Vancouver was quite a colorful, seedy, and dramatic town. We learn of the turmoil within the Vancouver Police Department as officers to the chiefs themselves were confronted with charges of corruption. We meet colorful characters from the detective Joe Ricci, who walked amidst Chinatown's opium dens, gambling houses, and brothels, as well as bootleggers who made fortunes from running rum. We also meet noted artists and remarkable women in our history. What Ms. Lazarus does is look at people like Ricci and Valerie Jerome and Nellie Yip Kwong through their houses, some of which are still standing. It's a really engaging history, much like her previous book, Sensational Victoria, and At Home with History, The Untold Secrets of Greater Vancouver's Heritage Houses, which she was on with back in 2007. And there's murder too, ghost stories and discussions of the sort of architecture style that we've seen in this part of the world. Eve Lazarus is an award-winning author who is a part of a great group of active local historians who write passionately about Vancouver's past. A lot of them are a part of the new book Vancouver Confidential, edited by John Belshaw. That looks at the city's dark side. That book, like Sensational Vancouver, is published by Anvil Press. Visit evelazarus.com for more. There's an event next Sunday, the 28th of September, at Word Vancouver as well. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Eve Lazarus. Ms. Lazarus, good morning.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me back.
Thanks for joining us. It's been a while, and you've been quite busy in the last 7 years or so.
I haven't. I can't believe it's been that long. It's gone so quickly.
Yeah. So, Sensational Victoria, is it? Because I don't I can't remember what was in it, unfortunately. It's one of those things. But it's sort of like this book, isn't it?
It is. With At Home with History, it was organized very differently. It was geographically. And with Victoria, certain themes really resonated with me, and they tend to be, you know, the brothels and the murders and the dirty cops and things like that, and they surfaced to the top when I was doing Victoria, and did it again with Sensational Vancouver.
Yeah, the thing about both books, and I guess your previous book, At Home with History, you're having a lot of fun, it seems, writing and researching all of this.
I really am, and in between times I write a blog, and I'm quite obsessive about it. I write it weekly, and it just lets me, you know, write up stories that didn't fit into the book or for various reasons or have just come to the top, so it's really great fun, and what's rewarding is there's so many stories.
Yeah, and it's a great blog, and I'm sure you hear from a lot of people who see the sort of stories that you put up there, as well as the photographs, because I think that's what gets shared a lot on social media.
Yeah, it's taken me a while to get my head around that. I guess my background as a print reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And but now I think, even with Sensational Vancouver, I probably spent almost as much time sourcing photos and taking photos as I did, you know, writing the book.
Yeah. And as I mentioned in the introduction, Sensational Vancouver was number one for weeks, wasn't it?
It was. It's still on the bestsellers list.
Yeah.
It's quite overwhelming, actually.
Yeah, and I see Vancouver Confidential's just behind you, isn't it?
It's number five.
Yeah.
It just came out a few days ago, and it's just incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's great, obviously, to have a bestseller. But beyond that, it must be gratifying that people are receptive to history, that there is a greater appreciation of it, because I mean there are gaps in sort of our collective minds as to what's gone on in Vancouver, that people are turning to Vancouver Confidential or Sensational Vancouver or your previous books. That must be pretty cool.
It really is, and I think with Vancouver Confidential there's 14 of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a huge range of backgrounds. You know, we've got musicians, we've got actors, we've got artists. Tom Carter did that fantastic cover. There's tour guides and just this diverse range of backgrounds, and they range in ages. I think our youngest is 26 years old, and I think it's fantastic that you've got all these different people in different age groups and young people really interested in history and seeking out these sort of untold stories.
So Sensation of Vancouver has a lot of these untold stories in it as well. I mean, if you have lived in Vancouver your whole life, you'll obviously learn something about it. Looking back at the entire book now, having it been out now for several weeks, what's the sort of Vancouver that emerges in from your view of it? It's an unfamiliar sort of Vancouver. Was it obviously a more colorful time? Was it an unsafe time?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you said that because it. I think we found in both books it really was. You know, you've got this idolized sort of picture of Vancouver in, you know, 40s and 50s before I was born, or, you know, of course, I didn't come here till the 80s, but it was a really violent place. It wasn't this Leave It a Beaver, you know, mm-hmm. housewife thing. It was, there were rapes and murders and gun play and lots of crime and even serial killers, and it really shocked me to find that out. On another level, you know, when I started looking into this, I think it was a much more interesting place than I'd seen from other books I'd read, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think the amount of time that's passed that allows a historian or writer to look at sort of the underbelly of it all?
I think that helps, but I think people, and I'm talking about sort of the other people from Vancouver Confidential too, yeah. sort of looking at it from a different way and really trying to, and I've tried to do this myself, but find the people that lived through it. For instance, in Sensational Vancouver, it starts off with Joe Rickey, and through the Vancouver Police Museum, I met Joe's daughter, Louise. Louise still lives in the home that Joe built in 1922, and it looks pretty much untouched, and she'd kept sort of boxes and boxes of newspaper clippings and letters and photographs, and, you know, I'd spent many a day sort of sitting in her kitchen and hearing stories about her dad, and her dad, of course, was the first Italian detective hired on by the Vancouver Police Department back in 1912, and it really was the Wild West. You know, they didn't have too much interest in things like warrants and evidence. They needed something, they just kicked down doors and shot first and asked questions later. Yeah. It was an interesting time.
And so all that material that she had, I pronounced her Ricci, but it's Rickey.
It's both, actually. Oh, it's Ricci in Italian, but when he came over, he was anglicized, and she was always and still is known as Rickey, but I think the family have gone both ways. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So this material that she had, no one had seen that before, right?
Some of it had been in that she'd given to the Vancouver Police Department, they had on file, and some of the photos are in the, I believe it's the archives. Have them, but no, a lot of it hadn't been seen before, so that was really exciting to be able to sort of present that, and present sort of that Vancouver through the eyes of her father.
I guess the thing that time allows us is I mean, the photo of Helen Pauls that's in the book, I mean, I've been looking at that for days now, because I went back to look at it just prior to preparing for this, and I mean, that's a photo. Would that have been in the newspaper after the murder? I mean, for people listening, it's the woman who's on the floor, and it's just the hall's just filled with blood. It's a crime scene photo, obviously. So that would have been in the archive for years, right?
Yeah. Now, I got that from the police museum, and you're right, it's a crime scene photo. And now you've asked it, I'm not sure, because when I went through, a lot of the newspapers are on microfilm, I'm trying to remember if I actually saw it in the newspaper, and I don't think I did.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess time allows a historian, a writer, to put that in their book, right, where it would not have been seen heretofore.
That's true, yes.
Yeah. The book talks a lot about murder. There's a lot of unsolved murders as well. You have a fascination with that.
I do, and in fact, I'm writing my next book. I'm in the middle of is on unsolved murders.
Really?
And that sort of came out from that chapter that I wrote. I'm just fascinated by it, and fascinated that, you know, these people particularly before the internet came online, they're just invisible now. Mm-hmm. Their deaths are unsolved and they're forgotten. And I'm really trying to tell their stories and about them and their lives.
Yeah, that's the one thing when I was reading the book, that you'd have a chapter, say, on or not even a chapter, but, you know, a story about a certain murder. And I'm wishing that it was longer. And so that would be great, this book that you're working on. When you write about, say, the Paul's murder or some of the other ones that appear in Sensational Vancouver, do you, and you have to live with all of the research and the sort, do you come close to solving it at all?
No.
Really?
No. You get sort of certain theories. Like, I came up with a serial killer theory with the Paul's murder. No, you don't. Like, I'm looking at sort of early newspaper clippings and things like that. I can't get access to the actual police files. I talked to, for instance, in one of the ones I'm doing, that was murder in 1976 in North Vancouver. I found the original lead detective on that, and he was able to give me some insights into that back then. But when they're unsolved, they won't let you look at the files, and I've tried filing freedom of information forms and things like that and got nowhere. So really, I'm tracing back and looking at friends and family members and talking to them and the police that worked at the time that are now retired. So it's a bit of a hard slog, but it's fascinating.
Yeah. The one thing that you do in the book is when you tell us about certain people like Joe Ritchie and even people like Michael Bublé and Bryan Adams and Wason Choi, you take us to their homes. Why their homes? What do you think the houses that they lived in reflect about them? And I guess in the larger sense, it also reflects something about the times, doesn't it?
It really does. This is sort of the Sensational Victoria, but it just one of the best ways of illustrating that. I was fascinated by David Foster, sort of this famous person coming from Victoria, and I'd wanted to include him in the book, and I'd reverse-checked and called the owner and said, "Hey, did you know that David Foster, you know, lived in your house?" And she said, "Well, yes, I did. You know, I'd been in the house for a couple of years, and there was a knock on the door, and there he was. There was David Foster, and he'd come back. His father had built the house, and he wanted a tour and tell me all about it." And I just thought, what a great story. And when I'd written that up, I'd sent a copy to David Foster's sister, and she'd sent it to David, and David wrote back to me and said, you know, living in that house and growing up in that neighborhood, it was a very modest Saanich neighborhood in Victoria, was so important to me, and I had six sisters, and, you know, they really formed who I am and what I did, and he was so proud of this. And I think that comes through all the time when I'm looking at that. Michael Bublé's family still live in the house where he grew up. You know, of course, they could probably live anywhere. But that whole sense of neighborhood and place is so important. And, yeah, it just keeps coming up, that theme, over and over again.
Paul Yee, another author, You write about his house, and you get a sense of how that shapes not only his view of the world, but his work later on as a historian, as a writer.
Well, it's really interesting. I was on a tour with James Johnston in Strathcona, and he's a friend of Paul's, and Paul was on it as well. And it was really interesting to talk to him and see the home that he'd grown up in. And Strathcona then, of course, was a really different place. He was really embarrassed about it, and he lives in Toronto now, and it was interesting hearing his views of growing up as a child then and coming back and visiting.
Yeah, the other thing that you do in the book is you take photographs you have photographs of the houses as they were, and unfortunately a number of them have been demolished, which is obviously a trend in this part of the world lately. Mm. We're losing too many of these character houses, aren't we?
We are indeed, especially when you're looking at places like the west side of Vancouver, and they're just being bulldozed in huge numbers.
Yeah, and we're losing more than just an edifice. We're losing a connection to time. Because when you look at houses, or you look at buildings even, you can sort of tell when they're built, and they embody, I guess, sort of the idea of what Vancouver was at that time. So if you see a brick building, say, on Main and I don't know, Main and Broadway area, you can sort of tell when that was built, as opposed to, say, sort of the green and blue buildings that are made of glass that we've seen in the last 25, 30 years or so. You also talk in the book about architecture and the importance of that and sort of the but back to the point on the bulldozing of buildings and sort of, because we see a lot of that online, people posting these old photos, and everything's being sold now for condominiums. Isn't it depressing when you go along King Edward and you see those for sale signs, and you know, and the houses are largely empty now, like there's city blocks that are just empty. But that also, in a certain way, doesn't it reflect where we're headed? Do you think it does?
I don't know. I mean, we're seeing change. I mean, change is inevitable, of course. I'd like to see less of it when it comes to our heritage stock. I wanted to write that chapter on, say, mid-century West Coast architecture, because that's fast disappearing. And while a lot of that's, you know, these are small houses on big lots, again, a lot of them weren't meant to last more than, say, 50 years. So there is that sense that, that change has to happen. But I hate the fact that we're just bulldozing these things and selling empty blocks. We had a Fred Hollingsworth house over here. I was on the Heritage Commission for a couple of years in the District of North Vancouver. And there was a beautiful old post and beam mid-century house, and it was sold, and the new owner bulldozed it and then put it up to sell for $70,000 more and got it. So, for an empty lot. So I see that and it just breaks my heart.
Yeah. But I guess change was constant throughout the 100 and so years of Vancouver's history. I mean, it's there throughout, isn't it?
Yes, it just seems to be in this dizzying place, you know, space now. We don't, you know, you look everywhere, it's construction and change, and land is, our houses have become investments, not something that, you know, we live in and want to pass on. And it really is a different mindset.
Yeah. When you go to you mentioned the Foster House in Saanich, but when you go to houses in Vancouver, especially the ones that you did in this new book of yours, Sensational Vancouver, obviously other people live in them now. Did a lot of them know the history?
No. I'm trying to think. You know, it's so wide. A lot of them do. Many don't. There was one I was writing about. I was fascinated by the whole idea that a lot of our iconic buildings, like the Marine Building and the Commodore and the Vogue, were built on the proceeds of rum running. So I wrote a chapter about rum runners and came across this fascinating captain that was a rum runner and lived here in North Vancouver. And the house was on the heritage register here, and the owner had won an award for heritage restoration. I'd called her up and said, oh, you know, it's so interesting that one of the early homeowners had been a rum runner, and she was just horrified that I was going to write about this rum runner's house, and her house was going to be known as a rum runner's house. And to me, that's just fascinating. I mean, I would love to have a story in my house that maybe not a murder.
Yeah,
I could
do
without a murder or a ghost, an interesting person, or a madam, or a bootlegger. Yeah, how cool would that be over the dinner party?
Yeah, so you write about a couple houses on Glen Drive, and I'm familiar with them because I went to Charles Dickens Elementary School, so I'd seen these houses growing up, and I had no idea that there were ghosts in there. Where are you on ghosts? Do you think there are ghosts in houses and buildings and the sort?
Well, when I started this, I was a complete skeptic and a non-believer.
Yeah.
But I've spoken to so many people, so many sort of logical, sane, normal, interesting, fascinating people that truly do believe and can describe it. And that, I don't think I'm someone that necessarily picks up things like that. But, you know, I believe there's something out there.
Yeah, so I guess I'm an agnostic on it because I've never seen one. I've never encountered a ghost. So, but I do think, if especially those the people that you talked to on Glen Drive, these two houses there, their stories, I mean, you buy them, they're real, right? You know, they're real for them. They one family, they had to sell the house, right?
They did, and Again, you know, it's funny doing the Victoria book. Victoria is supposed to be the most haunted capital in, or city in Canada. And I'd go to people's places and you know, to do a story about their garden or, you know, something else. And they'd say, oh, have you come about the ghost? Everyone had a ghost in the house. It was really quite interesting.
So you talk in the book about the places where you researched this book, researched your writing. There's a lot of, I guess, on-the-ground places, these houses themselves. But you spend a lot of time in the archive, is that right?
I do. This one particularly in the Vancouver Police Museum.
Mm.
I'm always fascinated how many people have never been there.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. But apart from the actual museum and everything that's on display there, they have amazing archives. And one of my favorite finds were these mugshot books. And they're these huge, huge leather-bound books. They're really, really heavy. And they tell entire life, well, not entire, it's a huge exaggeration, but they tell these stories of people in pages and, you know, sort of their life and literally their death in some cases. And I just had a blast going through them. I've used some in the book, just highlighted some of them. That they're kind of little mysteries about Vancouver.
And they're all handwritten, aren't they?
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. With comments here and there, and
so where do you write your books? Do you so you take the research and then did you take it home and write it in your office at home, or
I do.
Yeah, and this may seem like, I mean, we just talked about ghosts, but you have to live with all of these people, don't you?
Yeah, I think, you know, from days of being a reporter, I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing things. At least I thought I was, but I'm finding this, now I'm doing this new book on unsolved murders, I have to put it down a lot. I'm finding it's really affecting me. It's almost like talking about the ghost thing, but it's almost like I've got these people tapping me on the shoulder saying, you've got to tell my story.
Yeah,
it's been weird, and I have to put it down and walk away from it. And one of the weird things is I've got three different neighbors have connections to three different murders.
Really?
So I'm finding that just a bit oppressive.
Yeah. No, I bet it was, because I usually do my reading at night, and it was hard to read your book at night because, you know, the murders and the ghost stories and the photographs obviously are quite evocative.
Mm.
You know, I'm kind of fraidy scared that I'm going to go to bed thinking about these things, you know?
Yeah.
It must be a lot more, you feel that a lot more having to research and write all this stuff.
Yeah, some of them are pretty intense.
Yeah. The review of your book in the Georgia Strait, written by George Fetherling, a pretty good writer himself, he had this line, and I'll share it. Eve Lazarus is an enthusiastic researcher, a quirky writer of prose, and an energetic amateur historian in somewhat the same manner as the late Chuck Davis. That's a pretty good line, isn't it?
I was pretty flattered it being the same sentence as Chuck Davis, yes.
Yeah, and he's much missed, isn't he, in the community?
He really is. He was a bit of a mentor to me, and he was kind enough to be the first reader on At Home with History.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I really learned a lot from him and his books. His book, you know, the History of the Greater Vancouver book, was my Bible through both books.
Yeah, and when we look at Vancouver Confidential, in which you have a contribution amidst the dozen or so others, I'm looking at the list of the people that have contributed to Vancouver Confidential, and it really, as a student of history, as a citizen of this town, it's really heartening to have this community of historians that you're a part of, that are doing the great work in terms of chronicling our past.
Well, I'm very grateful to John Belshaw.
Yeah.
It was his concept, and really it's a sequel in some ways to Vancouver Noir, which he and Diane Purvey wrote a couple of years ago now. And he found us all and put it all together and babysat us all the way through it. And he's just a terrific writer himself and historian. So it was a huge thrill to be a part of this.
Yeah, and a lot of you are doing this. I mean, this isn't your day job, right?
No, I don't think any of us.
Yeah. So I mean, it's heartening, really, to this is all something that you're passionate about. and that you do this on a regular basis online and elsewhere.
Well, it's connected us to each other, too, because normally we wouldn't have met. We're all different age groups, mm-hmm. doing different things, backgrounds. But we've become quite good friends with most of the people on the book. You know, we hang out together, we support each other, and someone will come up with a question, and we all dive on it and try to research it. We're all very nerdy, right? You know, our idea of the great time spending an afternoon in the archives or special collections. And that's been really rewarding, because I think, you know, typically you tend to work by yourself as a writer. So it's been incredible meeting up with all these people.
Yeah, and you all some of you have great websites, like Lanny Russworm's site is terrific, yes. And Jason Vanderhill.
Yeah.
Your blog is just great reading.
Oh, thank you.
You can get lost in that for, you know, sort of the photographs and the sort. I mentioned Vancouver Confidential. You have an essay in it. What's it about?
Mine's about the Lenny Commission, and I just got fascinated with this. It was the first official inquiry into police corruption back in 1928, and it basically put everyone on trial. The mayor was L.D. Taylor at the time, and he was pretty controversial. And so he was on trial, the chief of police. And I'd found out about it when I was doing a bit of writing for Sensational Vancouver with Joe Rickey and Laurancy Harris, who was the first female police officer hired in Canada. And they'd both testified, and they'd both left the force just after the Lenny Commission. So I sort of started reading about it, and there were something like 5,000 pages of testimony. It went for about 6 weeks, had 100 witnesses, and it was just fascinating reading. And with headline material every day, it was like theatre for the people in Vancouver if they could get a seat. And you had everyone from the beat cop to the mayor of Vancouver, you know, pointing fingers at each other and talking about bribery and corruption and just really, really interesting stuff.
And this is a generation before the Mulligan, the Tupper inquiry, I guess, right, regarding
right.
Mulligan.
Well, right? That was 1955, yeah. So we're talking 1928. Really nothing much happened in between. They just, you know, aired all the dirty laundry and everyone went back to status quo.
That's history, isn't it?
Yeah.
You mentioned Lou Harris. Was she the first female cop?
There were two of them hired, but yeah, she was. She and Minnie Miller were the first two hired in 1912.
I see. And then the name that jumped out at me was Phyllis Mortimer, simply because she is the most recently deceased of the group, I guess, that you write about in the book. Did you get to know her?
Just through files that I found through the Vancouver Police Department. They had a lot of documents and annual reports and that sort of thing that they let me have access to.
Yeah. And are there any that are left from that era, say? Female cops?
No, not that I met.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a great chapter in the book because you talk about a number of them. I think there are like five or six of them. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I found it really, especially those early days of policing. I mean, these women had no training at all. Laurancy Harris was 48 when she was hired, and she was a seamstress from Nova Scotia. Minnie Miller was a nurse, and they were literally thrown into the police department and said, okay, we're worried about the morals of young women, you know, in Vancouver, and so you just, you know, put them on the straight and narrow, off you go. And, you know, they weren't allowed to carry a gun, they didn't have a uniform, and it was decades, you know, until all that sort of came together. And it just fascinated me. You imagine how difficult it would be for two women working in that culture back then, over 100 years ago.
Yeah, and you tell the stories of obviously where they live, and it's just fascinating reading. I mean, I think there's a book there too, don't you think?
I thought one of the favorite chapters that I had was The Legendary Women.
Yeah.
And that came out just because, you know, I sort of dubbed it in my mind Legendary Women that you've probably never heard of, because mm-hmm. I hadn't. You know, you everyone's heard of Harry Jerome, and quite rightly, you know, he's got rec centers named after him. There's a statue in Stanley Park, and he was an incredible athlete. But no one's heard of Valerie, his sister, who was just as amazing, and she's still alive. She's a teacher for 35 years and ran for the Green Party, and just this really, really interesting individual that went off to the Olympics with her brother, but no one's really ever heard of her. So it was a real thrill to be able to, you know, to talk to her for the book and write her story, which I just thought was fascinating. And people like Nellie Yip Kwong, who mm-hmm. Lived in Strathcona and was the first white woman to marry a Chinese man in 1900 and spoke five different Chinese dialects and really fought for the rights of Chinese. And lived in this fascinating house where the homeowner, he found out about her one day when he was looking out the front window and he saw this elderly Chinese lady peering in. Went asked, you know, outside to ask her what she wanted, and she said, "Oh, you know, my mother, Nellie Yip Kwan, she was adopted, lived here, and I was born here." And he said, "Oh my God, come on in," and they shared these incredible stories.
Yeah, yeah, it's just fascinating. There's so much to talk to you about in this book, Eve. It's been such a pleasure talking again. Congratulations on this book. Continued good luck with it. I hope a lot more people buy it because we need it.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been really fun to chat with you again.
You're very welcome. EveLazarus.com is the website. The book is called Sensational Vancouver. Also, Vancouver Confidential. Get that. Both are from Anvil Press. Eve Lazarus joined me on the line from North Vancouver in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.